It's not giving you the thumbs up.
It's not. Maybe I'm using the wrong hand. Oh, man. Huh. Okay. So what were you saying? Speaking of mindless entertainment.
Yeah, mindless entertainment. Welcome back to Reason Together, the podcast for Christians who think about stuff. I'm Thomas, here with Daniel, as usual, for episode 199.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're knocking on 200 there.
That's right.
Yeah. But before we get too much into the conversation here, we would like to, at the outset, thank our patrons over at patreon.com/reasontogether. We appreciate you guys supporting this podcast with your hard-earned dollars. Thank you for that. If you're listening and you would like to support us, you can go over to that same URL, patreon.com/reasontogether, and you can sign up for one of the tier levels there. I believe, and I haven't checked in a while, I believe the majority of the folks that do support over there have chosen the elite level support it.
Yep.
So they might like some company. If you'd like to go over there and join them, you can do that. Or you can continue to listen for free and just, you know, thank our patrons. So we appreciate you guys.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Sure. real quick, I kind of have one I want to start with.
Yeah.
Only because it's stuff like this has been on my mind as of late. Mm-hmm. And now today we have sort of the commemoration of a historic event.
Okay.
And I stuck it on the notes here kind of last minute, but you can see down there, I wrote D-Day. And the generation of today.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to miss when you think about the commemoration of D-Day, which I believe was, I think it's 80 years, 80 years ago, where U.S. soldiers stormed the beaches of Normandy and charged uphill into machine gun fire and, I want to say over 2,000 U.S. soldiers were killed on that day doing that. And in many ways were instrumental, ultimately, not immediately, but ultimately, in kind of saving the world. And I don't know that that's really putting it lightly. That's not hyperbole. They very quite literally may have saved the world from the Nazi regime. But it's hard to miss the contrast. And this is not a new idea to me. I've heard others talk about this in the news today. The contrast between that generation and today. So yeah, you have back then like 18, 19, 20-year-old guys. the average age, I think, was 26 who stormed the beach that day. Doing literal hero stuff courageously. And then you have today's generation where they have kind of a different definition of courage, you know,
and heroism.
You know, I'm going to speak my truth and, you know, that's courageous and that's brave. And meanwhile, you have guys who are literally the greatest generation, as it's called, because of some of the things that they did. So I was going to ask you, what do you think is different? What do you think has changed between the 18, 19, 20-year-olds of then versus now?
Well, when I think back to that generation, I know, I don't know, but I surely imagine that those 18-year-olds on those amphibious, landing vehicles that were about to be storming the shore were scared too, but they were willing. They were there and it took a measure of mental strength. And so I would say that something about an internal strength. And you have to say for the generation, there had to have been a whole different perspective of life. Couldn't have helped to have been a different perspective on life because you don't have video games. You didn't have the quick feed like you do today with television and video games and things like that. So life was just more, in some sense, physical and substantive and laborious, in a good way. And so that was a part of life in general. But
I've heard that referred to as life you can heft, or technology you can heft. In other words, you know, everything was tangible and real and had to be carried from one place to another.
Right.
There wasn't as much of this, you know, digital work.
Yeah. And not that I'm knocking technology or digital work necessarily, but it does tend to make us soft in certain ways, obviously, by removing the physical element. And that means that we have to work especially hard to be physically fit, you know, and in shape.
Yeah.
So that's just a component of it.
Like, you remember the days of lifehacker.com?
A little bit. I mean, remember the
that was so like it wasn't in the early days of the internet, but I would say maybe early 2007, 2010, somewhere in that range, life hacks became a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's the date. It just kind of seems like when I remember it. But then lifehacker.com came out, and everything was about making your life easier, you know, finding little tricks and things. And now, of course, it's almost a joke when people talk about hacks. So many of them are just stupid and don't even work, and they're just done for clicks and views and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think in many ways it's the undermining of effort.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lost sight of the value of effort. And I think maybe that's the difference. One of the differences in the generations is that the older generation knew what it meant to put effort into things and to heft things, so to speak. But do you think that there's a component too of the values they were raised with that were different?
I'm sure. I'm sure. Less secular, generally speaking. And by that, I mean less godless.
Right. Yeah. And I have some statistics, if I can talk on that, that I thought were interesting and kind of explained a lot. Church membership in 1937, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this article. Mm-hmm. Church membership in 1937 was at 73%.
Whoa.
96% of Americans, according to Gallup, said they believed in God in 1944.
Hmm.
I didn't realize Gallup was around back then, but I don't know much about Gallup. So a grand total of 4% of all households in the United States were single parent families in 1940. 4%.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Wow.
In other words, the guys
amazing.
Yeah, isn't it? The guys who stormed the beaches of Normandy, most of them, you could say based on this, were raised by a mom and dad.
Yep.
Two parents in their household.
To summarize what could be a much longer conversation, means that life obviously was much different for them. I mean, values were much different, yes.
And statistically, they were much more likely to be at least religiously oriented towards the Christian faith. Today, the American single motherhood rate is 41%. Is that not a staggering number?
Yes.
10 times the single motherhood rate of 1937. Only 47% of Americans are members of churches today. 47%. And the churches of today are, of course, much different than the churches of the 1930s and 40s. and 74% of Americans say they believe in God. And many of those are, according to this article, quasi-agnostic and believe in something spiritual that doesn't demand anything of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just a side note on that, you know, and we've probably made mention of this before, and I won't belabor it or over apply it, but the idea of the evolutionary mindset and the secular humanist mindset of what is right and wrong has to in some way affect whether you would go to war for somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, am I willing to give my life for you or for the country when this is all I got and it's about what I can get out of it? am I really willing to lay that all on the line versus if I'm a Christian and recognize, you know, morality and other obligations.
Yeah. And I guess it's been on my mind partially, you know, army stuff has been on my mind a lot lately.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know if our listeners know, but you know, my son graduated from basic training in the army.
Yep.
And he's now doing his job training, and he's told me interesting things about being there. And they have, of course, they're not co-ed. So the males are on one side and the females are on the other side. So they're in different bays of the barracks. And he said, I think out of, now I'm trying to remember now, out of 40, I think there was 40 some odd females, I think, in that one bay. I think he said the majority were lesbians.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I want to say he said 6 were not.
Out of 40?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was something like 6. It was a very low number. And I was already sort of thinking about the differences between the generations in that. It's like, so not only are they raised different, but you throw in the mix this whole thing about, you know, women going to fight for mm-hmm. their country
mm-hmm.
and ones who call themselves lesbians and such. It's like, it's hard to imagine that being of the same magnitude. It's a different mindset. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I have to say, you know, of the lesbian that they, you know, in regards to my earlier statement, it's not that none of them are willing to fight. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's unsaved secular humanists that are certainly willing to fight. You know, they have
why they're there.
Right. Some sense of duty. But you're just saying there must be some change of mindset.
There must be some change of mindset. And when you read some of the statements from Eisenhower, for example, mm-hmm. in the statements he gave regarding D-Day, I'm pretty sure it was Eisenhower. He used a very overt language about praying for our sons, is what he said.
Yeah.
He used the word sons deliberately. And I guess it's just kind of, in a sense, I'm wondering where are they now?
Where are the sons?
Not that there's no men going in. I mean, my son was around many other guys there.
Sure.
But where is that mindset that was existent 80 years ago for men to say there's a cause bigger than me and to be willing to go fight for it?
Now two questions I'd have. One is, what affected the draft play on, you know, there was an inordinate number of soldiers in World War II, comparatively to other wars. So I wonder, I'd be curious to know what the percentage was, of those who enlisted, you know, or volunteered to those who were drafted. Cause there would be an argument that, well, those who were drafted were doing it cause they had to, but, what was the other question I had? But I was going to ask, the other question would be, what, on the one hand, maybe we'd say men aren't as strong, so there aren't the men to go into battle. Do you think there's maybe another component to that there are strong men, but they've lost confidence in our military leadership? The way they're being used and directed? Yeah.
Today, yes. I know that military enlistment numbers are down. I don't know if it's the lowest they've ever been, but it's close, last I heard, is very low. And a number of guys that I've spoken with, a lot of them, it was because of concerns about the whole DEI thing, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
That essentially that would be rammed down their throats. And they would be forced to use people's, you know, pronouns or whatever. And so far, my son hasn't been subjected to that. They obviously have things that they make you read and understand about sexual harassment,
mm-hmm.
which I think that's kind of fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, do we really want guys, you know, standing around catcalling the girls, you know, from over in their bay? No, obviously you don't want that. But you know, the environment that I guess I envisioned was not as bad as I thought it would be from what he's described. Like I just envisioned really. That they would have, you know, and to exaggerate a little bit, you know, purple haired, you know, trans people, you know, what do they call them? Drag queens, you know, standing up, teaching classes on DEI to all of the young soldiers in training. But
well, maybe
but they didn't do that.
Yeah. You'd think it'll be different in tech school versus basic. I mean, because basic, they're basically roughing you around and getting you built up and putting you on marches and stuff like that.
I don't know. So far, it hasn't been. It's been even more, you know, chill for him in AIT than it was in basic. So it's just interesting to see, you know, we envision certain things about the military, and some of it's true. You know, it's obviously a rough environment when you're living with a bunch of people who don't have the same values that you do. But one thing I can say is that there is a truth and a reality to the notion that people will respect you more if you're true to what you believe rather than if you cave to try and be popular with them.
Yeah. Huh.
So I told my son, I said, so you've essentially graduated two basic combat trainings at the same time. One is physical and the other is spiritual, because you got to see firsthand that when you really are true to what you believe and you're willing to stand up and you're willing to be forward with what you believe and not back down and not compromise it, guys will respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the temptation is I need to soften what I believe and maybe throw out some curse words every now and then so they think I'm like them and whatever, and you know, laugh at their dirty jokes and whatever. I need to do some of that in order to earn respect with these other guys. The temptation is to think that, but it's actually false. All you'll do is make them think you're a fake and you don't live up to what you believe and they won't respect you for it. But they respected him for the way he stood up for what was right and the way he carried himself. And I guess I was encouraged to, not that I haven't seen that in the real world before, I sure have, but I was encouraged to see him experience it living with people who were nothing like him.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's neat. It is encouraging. It's neat to see even people, as we'll talk about here, I think a little bit later, high profile people who have a platform saying things that on a moral level, well, yeah, I agree with that. Well, that's great. Somebody's actually saying it. And I guess to me, it's an encouragement to think that, yeah, they're just people that encourage you in that direction of saying, just say what you believe, stand up for it, know why you believe it and be nice about it, but just be it, you know.
That was an excellent segue.
Yeah, thank you.
Take it away.
All right. So we had a request to analyze Butker's speech. If you haven't heard of that, Harrison Butker with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's a kicker, and he was invited to.
He's a kicker is maybe a little of an understatement. I mean, I'm no football fanatic, but it seems I heard that this guy kicked the longest field goal like ever.
Really? Oh, yeah. See, I don't follow sports, so I'm really not up on
that. I don't follow them closely. I do kind of hear rumblings, but I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners.
So he's a great athlete there. And he was invited to Benedictine College, Catholic College, as a Catholic, to give their commencement speech, which lasted about 20 minutes. And in it, he said some things that raised a firestorm of criticism. And so we were asked to weigh in on it. I will tell you, as I began reading I was, like I said a minute ago, I was impressed by, number one, a guy that thinks. And I don't mean, you know, it's an unfair characterization. I remember a skit years ago where you kind of, you had this stereotype of football players, like they've been knocked in the head one too many times. And you're like, and they're not necessarily that way. I mean, obviously these guys have gone through college, or they can be smart guys. Now, some you know, professional athletes, we know if they're smart, they're immoral and don't have a, don't have a control of their temper and their home life and whatever. But this guy is different. And you can tell, but anyway, just the points that he was coming up with, and that he would just say them out loud. Now, granted, he was in some ways preaching to the choir, because it's supposed to be,
he had to know, he had to know that saying what he said would get out and that there would be backlash. He had to know. I mean, the guy doesn't seem ignorant.
Right.
And he doesn't seem ignorant of how the internet works. So I think he said this stuff, you know, knowing that there would be some pushback and some backlash. And the short version is, he said things that to normal people don't really seem that controversial and really shouldn't be. But I'm sure you have some samples there in front of you, but yeah, I thought he was very insightful on things that he said.
Yeah, so
there is some Catholic underpinnings through a lot of what he says in the speech.
Right.
So it is couched in that Catholic language.
Yes.
So, and we obviously wouldn't agree with the soteriology of Catholics, amongst other things. But one of the things I think we do agree with them is social values, if I could call it that.
Yeah.
Societal values.
Yeah. Some of them, major ones, largely pro-life and family. Yeah. Well, and he even makes a distinction. What's interesting, I mean, he's saying in Catholic terminology what we might say in Christian terminology, you know, saying that there's the term Catholic is a broad umbrella. It's kind of what he sort of was alluding to, that there are people under this umbrella who, there's one man who made a movie that the whole point was stay silent about your faith, you know? And he's saying that, our president, you know, touts his, you know, makes the sign of the cross at a pro-choice rally. And, you know, so he was making the point overtly that, a lot of all these people that are controversial or whatever are Catholic. And so, so he's even identifying that, you know, he's making conservative statements inside the umbrella, that not every Catholic would. So you have to even know that inside Benedictine College, he would be speaking to a group of people that aren't all going to see like he sees, because they're adopting a wide range of maybe secular views, I imagine. And, anyway, so, but he actually said, now I thought this was interesting. He's kind of mentioned COVID, you know, you've been through COVID, but then it's like he didn't give him too much of that, like too much comfort. He says, while COVID might have played a large role throughout your formative years, it is not unique. Bad policies and poor leadership have negatively impacted major life issues. In other words, like all of us have been through stuff like this, you know, yours was COVID. But then he brings this up. He said things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, as well as a growing support for degenerate cultural values in media all stem from the pervasiveness of disorder. I thought that was number one. That was like the way he worded that, the pervasiveness of disorder. But
I didn't
also
catch that he included IVF in that.
Right. Yeah. That's what that was interesting, because that's a strong statement to make. You know, and, so
we covered that in an episode long time ago.
I'd be curious to know what I said back then.
if I remember right, and I think you can search on our site, we both concluded that we are in favor of it. That we weren't overtly against it, but I don't know that we fully developed an opinion. But I don't recall that we have any issue with it.
Yeah, well, my issue now is the byproduct of IVF. If you have to create, anyway, this is a side tangent. I'll just say this and then move on. If you have to create multiple human beings so that a few of them can get implanted so that one of them can be viable, what happens to the rest of them? What are we doing? Creating life and destroying it. You know what I mean? To me, that's...
I mean, arguably the same thing takes place with natural attempts, but...
That's kind of hard to prove, I suppose, but...
Just not all at once. You know what I mean? People who are trying to have a child don't always succeed. You know, there's several attempts made.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but I know I realize that's a side tangent. We can refer listeners to the original episode on that. On reasontogether.fm, but
yeah, anyway,
carry on with the
yeah. So he says, our own nation is led by a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith, but at the same time is delusional enough to make the sign of the cross during a pro-abortion rally. So anyway, he's not politically quiet there either. And let's see here. Saying that people want you. Oh, this is good. He said, but if we are going to be men and women for this time in history, we need to stop pretending that the Church of Nice is a winning proposition. Well, we would say the same thing. He said, we must always speak and act in charity, but never mistake charity for cowardice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you were talking about, is stand up for what you believe, say the truth. But I mean, didn't he just like sum up a large swath of churchianity, you know, that tries to be, nice and, and aren't we cool? Don't you want to come here? Because we're like relevant, man. You know, we're like hip. We're like you are. I know hip. I just like totally dated myself.
Yeah, you did.
But yeah. But the point being is that they were sort of being the Church of Nice, not obviously that you don't want to be nice, but if you're just trying to win people to say, I'm a fun, clean version of what you can get anywhere else. Let's just, you know, preach truth and how it can transform lives. So anyway, he kind of didn't see himself as a public speaker per se. And he spoke at a commencement the year before, didn't really want to do this one, but he was persuaded, to do it.
He also made some comments to the women in particular that I thought were interesting, he said he congratulated them on finishing their degrees. And he said, I'm sure that many of you, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, I'm sure that many of you will go out to accomplish great things, but the vast majority of you, I think he said, women have been told the most diabolical lies, that basically career is all that matters and you have to go pursue careers just the same as men. But the vast majority of you will likely be dreaming of your marriage and family more and you'll pursue
that. And that's what really brought the firestorm of misogyny, supposedly, and this and that, to basically say, saying you're going to be more fulfilled in the home than you are in your career. Well, yeah, great. Fantastic. I mean,
Well, what's interesting to me about all of the backlash, if you note where it's coming from, right? The people who are calling him a misogynist, some of the, TV shows and pundits that are out there and the college students that are angry about what he said, these are the same people that are protesting in favor of Hamas and carrying water for Hamas in the news, many of them, which is an actual organization that insists on women being wives and homemakers and cranking out babies and doing nothing but all of that. So it's like there's a bit of hypocrisy in the backlash. Because what they're accusing him of, he's just saying there's a natural inclination toward that. He's not insisting and demanding that by law all women do that. But yet they'll protest for Hamas, who does make it a requirement for women to stay at home.
He even described, and I, just jumping back here, you know, scanning, he even, it's just his candidness. I have to appreciate that he's even like driving at priests and some priests who basically don't fit the bill, and they worry too much about trite things than you know, when they should be leaders. And he's speaking at a Catholic college. So you're just like, okay, hey, kudos to you for saying it as a Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be similar to us in a way of recognizing the weaknesses of your own movement and saying, yeah, see, there are people out there that do this and do that, and this would be the correction. So, but going back to the point that really drew the firestorm was, the backlash was when he touched on women and their role in the home and their fulfillment there. It'd just be great to see, women rise up and say, we are fulfilled, here in the home. And, we're having an impact on society by investing in our children and recognizing, and supporting our husbands. And if somebody thinks that a Christian godly woman can't work, or doesn't have value outside of doing laundry, that's silly. I mean, read Proverbs 31. I mean, the woman considers a field and she brings girdles and she interacts with merchants and
She settled real estate deals.
Right. So, I mean, obvious, But to say that family is a priority and you're a mom and that the eternal value of your children and their souls is worth more than the 80 grand you're going to pull in from your career. Well, that needs to be said. And
perhaps that's the reason why recent generations have not had the same courage and fortitude as former generations, because maybe too many moms have been absent from the home chasing career. Mm-hmm. When really they have a precious influence there to make heroes, right?
Yeah.
To kind of call this back to our beginning discussion of what was different about prior generations who went to D-Day. They probably had moms that, spanked them and insisted on certain things and taught them family values and taught them to finish something that they start and told them to go outside and play. Simple things like that have a big impact on future generations, and moms can still do that.
So if you've just heard the claim of misogyny from the news, here's what he actually said. For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should be proud of all that you have achieved to this point in your young lives. I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross this stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you are going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world. I can tell you that my beautiful wife, Isabel, would be the first to say that her life truly started when she began living her vocation as a wife and as a mother. I'm on the stage today and able to be the man I am because I have a wife who leans into her vocation. I'm beyond blessed with the many talents God has given me, but it cannot be overstated that all of my success is made possible because of a girl I met in band class back in middle school, would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker. Wow. So she's the primary educator of our children. She is the one who ensures I never let football or my business become a distraction from that of a husband and father. She is the person that knows me best at my core, and it is through our marriage that, Lord willing, we will both attain salvation. Ooh, wow. There's your Catholic part coming in. But so to say, oh, this is misogyny, he's just suppressing the woman. He is speaking of her in glowing terms and saying, she keeps me on track. She helps me not to be distracted. She educates her children.
If you listen to the audio, he choked up a little bit.
Yeah.
When he spoke about her, the man loves his wife. He's clearly emotionally moved by what she does and what she means to him. That's not the sound of a man who's got his foot on her neck.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. And then he goes on with some more about having children. Heterodox ideas abound even within Catholic circles, but let's be honest, there's nothing good about playing God with having children. Whether that be your ideal number or the perfect time to conceive, no matter how you spin it, there is nothing natural about Catholic birth control. Okay, interesting. So now he's getting on birth control. So, wow, you know what I mean? I mean, just like,
I mean, just, yeah,
it's like,
yeah, I mean, he knew what he was doing, I think. He had to know that the things he was saying were going to make the news. Not that I'm saying he's trying to make a name for himself. I don't take him as doing that. Mm-hmm. I think he really is just trying to be more open with those values. And I've seen in a number of avenues where there is a push for conservatives to be more open, mm-hmm. and to not be afraid to speak out about things where you could lose your job over.
I would jokingly say that maybe he's just trying to make sure he'll never get asked to speak at commencement again. He's like, I don't like doing this, so I'm just like going to totally torch things, and then they'll never ask.
Watch, he'll get asked even more.
Yeah. So, hey, Ethan, there you go. There's some of our analysis of his speech. All right. Do you want to read the feedback here? At the top,
If you think we need to,
I don't know that we really need to. No. Okay, let's see. We've got about 10 minutes left here. I want to read you a quote. I'm in a book right now that has been neat. Following the parenting book I read, I don't know if this one was referenced in that one or somehow I got onto this book. But it's called Habits of the Household. Mm-hmm. And he made, right at the beginning of the book, he made this really interesting statement that, let's read his words here, get back to it. The most significant thing, finding it here. One of the most significant things about any household is what is considered to be normal. One of the most significant things about any household is what is considered to be normal. What culture have you developed in your home that's normal for you? And he gives the example, you know, that, okay, I got little kids and they're getting out of the bathtub and they're wrestling and they're doing all this and it's chaotic and I'm frustrated. And finally I get upset and I'm yelling at this one and I finally get them to bed, you know, and then I pray with them, and that may seem hypocritical. And then I walk out of the room and I'm, you know, and I realize this is the normal of our house. This happens all the time, or something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe that's part of what. But anyway, so he's going to be talking about trying to, I think, instill certain habits in the household and see them from a perspective and realize that your habits, small as they are, have a powerful impact in the formation of the way that you, of your family and sure. their thinking. So anyway, I just thought that was really interesting because that could be said really of any society, any level of society, the culture itself at large, or church, your church, mm-hmm. you know, a significant thing about it is what is considered to be normal in that environment. Yeah. And so if you see the normal in your home and you say, this is crazy, I don't like it. Well, then maybe step back and say, what needs to change, you know?
Sure.
At a foundational level. But then he goes on with that. It says, moments aggregate and they become memories and tradition. Our routines become who we are, become the story and culture of our families. So in other words, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, things just keep rolling on. And he's not talking about just that one time fun thing that you did. Oh man, I remember that thing. But it's those things that become routines, that become habits. And he describes habit well. And anyway, it just, it's been a neat book so far.
Yeah. Good.
Yep. So talking about habits, while I've got you on the subject here, and I may ask you more about this in the future, Because there was something specific. We've talked about how we'll come up with questions, but we don't type them down in time. Yes. And then we go, I know I had a question there. And it was something related to that. But I just thinking about habits. Does the Bible talk about habits?
Yeah, I think it does.
In what way can you point to Scripture as giving a foundation for habits or referencing the idea?
Traditionally, it would use the word customs more so mm-hmm. than the word habits. And I mean, the primary example I think of was the Lord himself when he goes off into a private place to pray.
Good.
And I believe it said, as was his custom. Mm-hmm. If I remember the language correctly.
That's good.
But that addresses the, at least the fact that Jesus had a particular habit. I think more than anything, there's an undercurrent that the Lord, in a sense, made human beings creatures of habit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sort of see that in various behaviors of characters throughout Scripture. Habit is essentially the daily vote that you place toward who you actually are, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how certain characters of Scripture made a name for themselves, essentially, when we think of them, is because they had habits to do certain things, you know, mm-hmm. to have proclivities toward faithlessness or proclivities toward certain idol worship and so on, certain mm-hmm. pagan practices and such, or prayer, for example. So they did things on a routine basis. So I think there's an undercurrent of habit and an overt mention of Christ's habit. And I'm sure there are other examples that I can't think of at the moment.
Well, yeah, I think just culturally, as Jewish people, God had implemented several codes, if you will, that were to be ingrained as a way that they were always supposed to do something. Of course, then they took it and compounded it by who knows how many times. But, you know, so they got down to how they would wash their hands and when they would do this, when they would do that. But it became, as you say, a custom, a tradition. But it was, in a sense, habit was built into their lifestyle and into their worship that mm-hmm. we do this on this day. Yeah, it still is. And we would go to synagogue and we would do this and we would do that. There was an order to things in their life. They would do this, they would do that. I think as a norm, and again, that your habits go to your norms. What are your norms? Mm-hmm. I think it's almost assumed, but it's also very much there. Right at the end of our nose, as we're reading Scripture, that God is saying, do this way, especially in all the codes of the Old Testament, that was very specific. Well, if that was something that they routinely were to do, and it was, then that became, in essence, habitual, right? Mm-hmm. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4 seems to speak to the habits of child mm-hmm. training as you walk by the way, when you sit down, when you rise up, when you lay down. That habitually, now it's not giving the specifics of the habit, but speaking that we would use those opportunities, which are everyday opportunities, so that our training of our children could be habitual. Just interesting to think that there is a biblical foundation and certainly a precedent, a historical precedent from God for the concept of habit and how we structure our lives, and that certain habits affect your life, you know, they will affect your life profoundly. But and so when you have to break off a sin and try to implement something else, of course you want to habitualize righteousness mm-hmm. And not just make it a point in time or a singular action, you know, but make it a path and a way and a mode of operation.
Right. Well, and that's why people who talk about habits a lot don't just suggest breaking a bad habit, but replacing it with a good one
mm-hmm.
is because we're going to find a habit again. You don't just get rid of one, you'll find another one that isn't good. So you have to replace it with something that solves the problem.
And he may, yeah. good. And he made the point in the in that book that I mentioned that you don't think your way into a habit, so you don't think your way out of one. You practice your way into a habit, so you have to practice yourself out of one. You know what I mean? That it's going to take work to actually get out of the rut, to pull that out of the rut and go a different direction, because it's very easy to stay in the rut.
Yes.
So good. Well, that's the end of our time. And we've, speaking of time, we have a question here on family time. And I mentioned something about worship, and you have something here about worship. And so I could have made a double segue, I guess, for whichever way you want to go as we enter the after show. But before we do, if you have a thought on anything that we've said here, or a question that's been kind of rattling around in there, and you say, hey, I'd like to throw it at those guys to chew on a little while, ReasonTogetherPodcast@gmail.com. Send it our way. Send us your thoughts, your criticisms, especially your congratulations and exaltations and no, just kidding. the criticism, send to Tom. Otherwise, they just go in the junk drawer. If you have a thought, send it ReasonTogetherPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much.
Yes, we appreciate you listening, as is your custom. Thank you for that. We are encouraging balance, developing perspective, and connecting faith to practice. This is Reason Together.